With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You're listening to Achtelrohr, broadcasting from the beautiful South Birmingham. Accept no substitute.
Well, hello, dear listeners. Welcome to the real Millwall fan show. Accept no substitute, dear listeners. There are others out there purporting to be the number one Millwall fan show, but you are listening to the authentic, real McCoy. With me on today's, this afternoon's show, is not Aaron Paul. We're going to think they're sending out a mystery, all persons mystery location alert for Aaron. We've been trying to reach him all day. We think he may be in the Luton area, possibly on Radio 5 business. But anyway, I'm sure he's safe and well. But for the moment, you're stuck with me, Nick Hart, and my co-hosts for the afternoon, which is Mr. Ryan Loftus. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Good afternoon, all. I would like to send out a plea for Aaron. Just get in touch, buddy. We're all worried about you. And, I mean, if he has gone to Luton, then I know that can be a lot for some people to take in. So hopefully we hear from him soon. But no, it's good to be on.
And a big, big welcome to Michael Avery stepping into. We do have a rotors for these shows, listeners, but anyway, it's all gone out the window today. But Michael Avery stepped into the breach. Big thank you to Michael. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Good afternoon, all. I believe Aaron is in, rumour has it, deep discussions with Husky Chocolate on the sponsorship deal.
Do you think they've bought him? Do you think he's sold out his podcast friends and gone for the Husky what is it, the Swedish bit, the Husky Krona?
Yeah. Well, I'm picturing the classic Reservoir Dogs where he's tied to the chair, and instead of chopping off his ear, he's like throwing Husky chocolate all over him to stop him tweeting them every 5 minutes or something like that.
Ryan and I, because it was originally going to be Aaron chairing it and then Ryan and myself as guests, and we've gone through the seven stages of grief trying to find Aaron today. But anyway, we've given up all hope in the end, and we're going to do the show without him. But he'll be back. Aaron Paul will be back next week. Radio 5's Aaron Paul. He's probably at Luton tonight and is deep in script conversations and, you know, things of a show business nature beyond our ken. Chaps, 8,882 days since Charlton Athletic last beat Millwall. We've already reviewed the game on Friday night, but I do love that statistic, don't you? I think it's just 12 victories ever for the Addicts over the Lions. It's the weirdest thing. I think it's one of the weirdest statistics in world and international, and certainly domestic football.
Well, we've certainly got a hoodoo over them. That's for sure. I mean, I'm slightly older than Ryan, and when I see these sort of young millennials saying, "Oh, they've still not beaten us in my lifetime," it makes me feel older and older when I see that. But I remember being in the Coldplay Lane end when they beat us that day, and back in the mid-90s, and. I just remember. I vividly remember us not playing very well, and then the away stands cheering quite an awful lot. But little did I know that at nearly 34 years of age, married with two children, that'd be the last time that I'd see us beat Charlton. But I mean, Ryan's just sent me over something that's going to be put in the match day program, and it's if you don't mind me quoting Ryan, of course. It's such an interesting wording. The rivalry with Charlton is an odd one, an almost one-sided obsession. Think England and Germany, Piers Morgan and Meghan Markle. Now, I'm not sure which one I would rather be.
The point with that, Michael, is just that one side really doesn't give a shit, and for one side it means a lot. I think for the Charlton rivalry, I think was kind of what I wanted to get to at that, was just that it's one, and I think you were saying this, Nick, on the post-match show, that it doesn't really feel like a massive rivalry for Millwall. Like, you know, you go up and it's West Ham, maybe Chelsea before as well, even though we haven't played them a lot. Now you've got Leeds. Even Palace would come before Charlton, but it's, you know, they should be because of the close nature of them that they are to Millwall. It's very easy to get to. But it does feel like they care a lot more about it than us, which I think makes the record all that much more sweeter. Yeah, and I just thought the vision of Piers Morgan ranting for the 1,000th time about Meghan Markle, when she probably doesn't really know who he is. I think that was a nice little
an analogy,
I think, between the Millwall and Charlton relationship.
I'm going to ask you a personal question, Ryan. Were you born before or after the last Charlton victory over Millwall? Have you lived your whole life never knowing Charlton?
I am a Charlton victory virgin.
You've never known it.
And I hope that I never will. I think the last time they beat us was in 1996, the year I was born, but I think slightly before I came. So it was planned well. So, yeah, long may it continue. I think we gloss over the 13-year gap of actually playing them, but, you know, it all counts. It all counts.
That gap is always thrown back at you by these blokes that do these odd-bod YouTube videos where they video themselves watching the television. And I really don't... I know I'm, you know, not of the modern generation, but I really don't get why you'd watch three Charlton bullies watching the television commenting on the game, you know, when you've seen the game yourself and you can hopefully form your own opinions. But that was quote the Premier League years, Michael, don't they? They were in the Premier League.
Sorry to cut you off just quickly. It's like an acne version of Gogglebox, isn't it?
That's not acne the place name either, is it? It's the skin condition.
I think that is a very correct way to put it. But that's the thing, even with that gap, it's 12 games now in a row in which they haven't beaten us. I'm just looking, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 draws, 6 wins. So, you know, that's a good record that we have against Charlton. And, you know, they're all in the league, so it's home and away. So there doesn't seem to be any stopping us when it comes to Charlton. And, you know, it's good to see them restrained. I know the YouTube video that went round after the home win of the lad crying, we simply can't beat them. And just Lee Bowyer's post-match interview, those sort of sweet things that Millwall fans love to be hated, and they love clubs hate in losing to us. And it just makes it all the better.
Well, I don't believe in any kind of almighty deity, but if there is one, I certainly don't think he's a Millwall fan, judging by our historical record, he's certainly not a Millwall supporter. But if there is one, and he lurks out there in the depths of the universe, he's got it in for Charlton for some reason. They've actually, on occasions, not played badly. I didn't think they had their little moments on Friday night. They had some shots that Bart had to be quite smart about to push around the post and get a hand or a fist on to stop it. So they had moments, and in previous games they've actually had, you know, they've come close, but for some reason some kind of mystical presence stops the ball from going, or it goes in off someone's backside in the net. I mean, it's just really weird. It's a very odd local derby rivalry. Speaking after the game, you know, Gary Rowett was talking about, he knows what these games mean. I think that's essential in a manager. One of the things I like about Gary Rowett is that our season may be drifting on to a kind of a mid-table conclusion now, but he understands the importance of climbing up over the top of Charlton, doesn't he? You need to be able to take something out of the season. That's normally to be, you know, one up on your local rivals.
Yeah, I thought Rowett was really good after. He spoke about the record and how a lot of the club's directors and board members will remind him of it as much as the fans do. So, you know, it's always good. Everyone wants local bragging rights. And, you know, with Palace and West Ham, well, hopefully West Ham will be down with us next year, but with us not playing them so often, you have to take the graces that you can get. So he knows, and I think it shows kind of how he's bought into Millwall, but also it shows that one level of detachment where he also said that, you know, as much as we wanted to win it, we didn't want to lose it for the record, we wanted to win it as a show of intent and in terms of the wider context of the league, you know, rather than hanging all his hopes on, oh, we'll get a derby win and lift the spirits. He's looking at the bigger picture. And I think sometimes that that kind of one level of detachment can be really positive in terms of Gary Rowett keeping a calm head and just being level-headed where others may be losing it. And you know, the fact that he still cares and still has that, you know, that professional kind of integrity and that knowledge of what the fan base want is a really nice blend, and I think he does it really well.
Sorry, I was going to say I think I agree with that there entirely, because I can't remember who the chap was on who was after the Charlton game, Nick, with you after the
Dave.
Ryan's discussion. Dave said it as well when he said that, you know, under Neil Harris, we'd been quite happy just being sort of like 21st of being safe. And it got me thinking that, you know, that with under some managers, and I'm not even going to say Neil Harris specifically, it could be under a number of different managers in different divisions, but a lot would think, well, you know, the playoffs are just out of touch in reach. It's going to be a bit to claw back. If we go away from home, get a 0-0 or 1-1 with Charlton, that'll be job done, and we'll just settle for 12th, 13th place. But he does seem to sort of like want to go down fighting a bit, Gary Rowett. And what was refreshing to see was that we didn't go to Charlton, as you say, Ryan, with the ambition of just not to lose, but we actually looked like we wanted to win the game as well. It wasn't a lucky goal. It wasn't a lucky build-up. It was good match play. It was intent to get 3 points. And, well, do you know what? If we can't go up via the playoffs, or if we can't get in the playoffs, we're going to do as best as we can to get as close as we can. And it's good to see.
Definitely. It is. I mean, I think the other thing, I mean, just reading some of the notes that we put together for the show, I mean, mentioning on the news that then Billy Mitchell's role on Friday night. I mean, we are still trying to chase down the sixth spot. I think it may be receding from us, being realistic, because results over the weekend weren't especially kind to us. Cardiff, I think, getting that late. Was it an equaliser, or did they win it on Sunday? I think they won it, didn't they?
Winner again.
Yeah, that kind of pushed them probably a little bit too far. But it's interesting to see that he is, you know, using these games as an opportunity to have a look at players in the squad. And Billy Mitchell, I thought, came over really well on Friday night and will be almost certainly a player we see more of in the future. Injuries, though, Ryan, I think, are starting to tell on us a little bit, aren't they? I mean, I think, did you say before the start of today, the call that Mason's out or doubtful for tomorrow's game?
It looks like it is going to be a problem. And I think it is, it's one of those things that, with the size of Millwall squad and the intensity of the games, it was always going to be a concern. But yeah, it looks like, I think News of Den was reporting that Mason Bennett is out for Wednesday. I think he's got a tear in his abdominal muscle, and it looks like he's going to be very, after this Friday game, Rowett said that it looked like Mason would be back, but obviously now it looks like he'll be out for it, and maybe not getting back until Hull on Saturday, and maybe not even making that game. So injuries are something that's always plagued Mason Bennett, and it looks like he picked it up when the defender kind of put a knee in his back on against Swansea. So it's not even a muscle strain from sprinting or lack of fitness or anything. It's one of those impact injuries that we've had a few of those. I think Ryan Leonard's long-term injury and Ben Thompson's long-term injury this year, they've all been impact injury. We're getting a few kind of muscle injuries and training ones with maybe some of the older players like Williams and Hutchinson. But at the moment, it's just those impact ones that could cost us that little bit of momentum. I think we missed Mason Bennett on Friday. We showed that we can do it without him, obviously. But with Bodvarsson out as well, that's just those attacking numbers kind of dwindling. And that's an area of the pitch that Millwall, well, you could say we can't afford to lose attackers, but then given that's been probably our weakest side of our team, maybe we're not missing too much, you know? So no. It'll be interesting to see. It's a good test for Rowett, at least, to see faith in youngsters or different plans. Like, I thought the Charlton game, you know, he tried something different with a slightly different formation, and I thought it worked really well for long periods of the game. So the fact that it's forced him to think and forced him to try things, that could bring in positives, you know.
I mean, the players, the squad have swung from one extreme to the other, Michael. I mean, you are you know, a runner yourself, aren't you? So you know the importance of staying, you know, of keeping yourself sharp and in form. And to have a 14-week enforced break for the players, it and then lurch into this highly intensive period that is a very odd, you know, feeling for us all. It must be odd for the players too. It must take its toll on athletes.
No, but do you know what? Funny thing you say that, and you mentioned about running as well being slightly off topic. All what's going on at the moment, you know, with coronavirus and these things being cancelled and things like that. I'm part of a lot of group chats and forums with runners, and a lot of people are spot on. You know, we're like if you are someone who even recreation these sort of runs and enters these things, you've got to keep sort of as fit as you can, because at the moment, you know, we're, a lot of my friends who do it, and bear in mind we've been doing it for weeks and weeks and years and years, we've sort of like tapered down our running because we're a bit like, well, we'll just keep ticking over, and you know, if none of our races cancel exactly, we'll start doing them. But even now, and this is, I mean, last year I'd done like 4 or 5 marathons, half a dozen half marathons, but even now I'm struggling to get sort of fit, and I'm noticing it's taken me a little while to get back up to the level that I'm used to. Don't get me wrong, it's nowhere near elite or anything like that. But as you say, Nick, you know, if you're an elite athlete and you just do the bare minimum at home with no real structure, just enough to keep you ticking over, and then you go into this type of environment where you have to be right at your peak physical condition. Yeah, no, totally. And especially where you are a bit older, you will notice the niggles, and you will notice it might take a few more days to get over these things. You're right.
Well, one thing I will share with the listeners, I did 20 press-ups yesterday afternoon. It's killing me today, chaps. I'll tell you that much. I've woken up with arms are killing me. So, you know, it must play its part. Jason Malumbi, I'm just reading the News at Den story from Friday. I mean, taken off at half-time. He was on a yellow card, and Rowett replaced him with, I think it was Ben Thompson that came in for him in the second half to avoid the possibility of the second yellow and going down to 10 men. I mean, he hasn't played his best since the return run, has he? I mean, one thing I do like about him, though, is he's 100% committed. I know he's a lone player, so he's not our player, but his mind doesn't work like that. He's a Millwall player at the moment, and he'll give everything for the cause. Sometimes, you know, gets a little bit hot-headed, but I think that's part and parcel of his game, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you have to take that with Malumbi. I think from the second he walked into the door, you could see that with you know, his intent of asking to be loaned out and asking to come to Millwall because it suited him. I think that it speaks to the sort of player he is, and he's the sort of player that Millwall fans love in terms of that,
absolutely,
that work ethic and that drive. And you see it all the time, him leading presses, charging out. Sometimes that can be to his teammates' detriment in terms of holding shape and, you know, a little bit of ill-discipline. But you've got to consider the fact that he's a young lad as well, playing his first full season.
Yeah.
So he's going to have to learn, and he's playing at a really high level for such a young player who, he just needs to learn. And I think it's good to have options now. I think with Woods and Williams as those senior players alongside him, Leonard back from injury, and obviously Ben Thompson back from injury, it gives Rowett the choice to see Malumbi as yellow carded at halftime. He was going into a couple tackles and, you know, looked like he may have picked up a red if he'd have kept going. So Rowett has those options now just to bring someone else on, cool him down. Obviously, we've got a lot of games coming. So it's good to keep him fresh. Also good to get Thompson on to get that fitness back up. And Thompson was very good when he came on. Like Rowett said, kind of carried the ball out and drove well, getting on the ball and running at players like we're used to seeing Ben Thompson do.
Yeah.
So it's good to have both of those options who are, you know, similar. Like they're similar in terms of the energy they bring, but different in terms of the areas of the pitch they affect. But to have those options at this stage is just positive for Millwall.
It's going to be an interesting starting 11 tomorrow, Michael, isn't it? I mean, it's a weird game, a Wednesday afternoon, 3 o'clock kickoff against Middlesbrough tomorrow, managed by Neil Warnock at the moment. But it's going to be an interesting starting 11 tomorrow. I mean, I've spoken to you about the Ryan Woods question. Are you a Ryan Woods fan? I know that Ryan is, but are you a Woods fan, or is the jury still out for you on the question?
I think to a point, I am still getting a few splinters in my behind where I've been sitting on the fence too much. I think there's an element that, yes, certainly right at the beginning, the way he was sort of spraying balls around and looking up and picking passes. And what did they call him when he first joined? Wasn't it like a ginger perlo or something like
ginger
that?
Ginger perlo,
yeah.
So, you know, when you see that aspect of his game, he is very, very good. And I mean, that ball over the top, Jed Wallace was absolutely...
Yeah, that was strong, a thing of
perfect,
beauty.
Perfectly weighted.
That was a breathtaking really moment, wasn't it? Yeah, I agree.
You see moments like that and you think they're very, very good. But I do think to a point, and I'm certainly not in Harry's camp when it comes to his opinion on Ryan Woods. But I think I can see what Harry means. Sometimes when you require that bit of urgency and perhaps a bit of one-touch passing or one-touch, you know, fast-paced football, if you're trailing a goal, perhaps Ryan Woods may not be the best option.
Yeah.
And I think that when you are the games we've played recently, Derby especially, where we lost that, where we are requiring a bit of oomph and a bit of action, and you see someone who has a touch and look up instead of like pinging a ball down the line. When you've got Ben Thompson on the bench, who is that bit more fiery character who likes to get a bit more in your face, I can see the frustration. However, as I said, you on the other side of the coin, I can see why at times he's a valuable asset. But here's the ultimate question. Did Conor Mahoney do enough to warrant a start?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to Act on Millwall.
It's an interesting question. Like I said the other day, I want to like Conor Mahoney. I want him to be a decisive, the kind of left wing talent. And I think we've mentioned before, Ryan, haven't we? I mean, he's got the talent to unlock a defence, and that's a rare talent. And we don't have many players like that. The only drawback with Conor is the consistency. He does it in fits and starts, and we need it a lot more often. And I dare say this is a conversation that Gary Rowett has with him on a regular basis. Would you start him tomorrow, Ron?
Yeah, I think. I don't know. It's an interesting one, because I think I wouldn't be surprised maybe to see Millwall line up the same as they did against Charlton, maybe with Ben Thompson starting in place of Brian Leonard. Right. Maybe just for a bit more attacking threat, where Millwall get into the edge of the box against Charlton and not quite getting it into the box or creating the chance. So I think Ben Thompson in that sort of, when Millwall were attacking with basically six players behind Smith at points, Thompson would be really good, like live wire to have in that position. Borough are, they're under Neil Warnock now. They're probably going to sit back. I'm just looking, they just lost, they've lost back to back against QPR and Hull since Warnock took in. So they're not in the best place. Okay, they lost to Hull in the last minute, but QPR dominated them in terms of the possession. So I think Borough had about 30-odd%. So chances are they're going to be sitting off, especially as they're the away team. So, again, Woods in that hole dictating the play will work, I think, if Rowett wants to keep the same system. But then you have the aspect of it's a Neil Warnock side, so will lumping the ball up to Matt Smith be the most effective? Warnock is that's his style. He'll probably be pretty adept at dealing with that. Despite not having a lot of time with them. So it'll be interesting to see if he throws Mahoney straight back into it and goes maybe back to starting with Bradshaw. But
I was just going to say Bradshaw over Smith.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the league table. Middlesbrough, actually, I hadn't realised, they're in the bottom three now, aren't they? And we've got Hull again on Saturday, fall from bottom as we speak, as we record this. I mean, it's a big club, Middlesbrough, if they go down into League One. I know there are other big clubs already in that league, Sunderland, not the local rivals, but that's a big club. They will be fighting for their lives, you would expect, tomorrow. So it could well be something of a battle, and you need to pick an 11 that are able to match that, because I think it's going to be a hard-fought game tomorrow.
I was going to say, how long is Warnock still at Middlesbrough?
To the end of the season, I would have thought.
Yeah, I think it's to the end of the season for now. I'm sure they'll have a... I imagine they'll have a relegation kind of clause. If they stay up, maybe he'll get an automatic extra year, or because I think he didn't want to wind down when he left Cardiff. I think he was pretty adamant that it wouldn't be his last job. So I think he'll probably get an extra year if they stay up, and then maybe look elsewhere if they go down.
For us, it's a must win. I mean, I don't think there's anywhere for us to go other than to get 3 points, because then if we don't, I mean, the season really has reached its conclusion for me. Before 42 games done with just 4 to go, and we're 5 points short of Cardiff in 6th spot. If we do have any realistic ambitions to chase that down, it's got to be a win tomorrow or bust. I don't know if you boys agree with that.
Yeah, I think, I 100%. I think, to be honest, the 5 games left, I would say at least 4 out of those 5, if not all 5, are must-win games for Millwall.
Yeah.
If playoffs are to be the aim, because, like you said, we've got Barrow, we've got Hull, we've got Huddersfield, obviously on the last day as well. So we've got 20th, 21st and 22nd as it stands. And, okay, Millwall have historically kind of struggled against the sides of the bottom, and obviously we drew against Barnsley despite putting in a decent performance, but we need to be getting 3 points, because look at people's fixtures. Cardiff are obviously in the driving seat now, 3 points clear of Derby in 7th. They've got 3 of the same games as we do. They've got Blackburn still to play, they've got Borough and Hull to play, they've got Derby to play, which is going to be a huge game.
Yeah.
They've got Fulham to play, who are all out of sorts, but obviously that's not the easiest game. The other teams around us, Derby have a really hard running. Swansea don't have a massively difficult one. I think now you're looking maybe down to Preston. Preston are 1 point behind us, so they're 6 points off Cardiff. So with their form, maybe they're out of it. So I think it has been down. It's now down to the 4 teams: Cardiff, Derby, Swansea, and us.
Mm.
And I think that there's some decent teams there in some decent form, and they will all be looking to win their last 5 games. And it will be whoever has the best form in these 5 games will be in that 6th spot, I think. So building on a hard-fought win against Cardiff has got to be Rowett's main priority. And he'll be really disappointed with his side if they don't put in a performance. I think Millwall wanted to win this one by 2 goals, 3 goals. You know, really, they want a really comfortable one. They don't want to be edging out another 1-0, I think.
Yeah, because the goal difference is actually quite tight. I mean, Cardiff's goal difference at the moment is +7. Then you've got Derby on 3, Swansea and Millwall on 4. So goals scored could well be, goal difference could well be a factor come a very tight finish. I agree. I think it's a must win. One thing I did like about the game on Friday was the 80th minute, it seemed to be drifting to a 0-0. You could see 0-0 written all over it. And somehow, that moment of brilliance from Conor Mahoney to find the space and work the space to get the shot on target, which the goalkeeper spills, and to have the most unlikely figure of all in Jake Cooper to be in the mix and finish. I mean, that's the kind of incident moment, fighting spirit that wins 3 points when one was the more obvious outcome. So the squad seemed to want it as much as we all do, and that's good to see too.
Yeah, what I think will be interesting, and this may be one of the quirks that we see of kind of lockdown behind closed doors football, is kind of in the gist of the piece I sent to Michael for the programme, that the Derby Day victory isn't the same without the fans there. I was just thinking to myself, imagine the scenes, as they say, or just the reaction, the uproar to Jake Cooper's late winner there. The away end,
the energy
going absolutely insane. Absolutely. The energy would be brilliant.
Yeah.
And that would be enough, you would hope, maybe, or to could be enough to just lift Millwall, and that injects that momentum that they need. So you wonder how it will be different with the players. Hopefully the players get that, and obviously it's an important game for them. Hopefully that gives them the momentum. But you'd imagine with the fans there, following that up with a home game would just be, the place would be buzzing, and the anticipation is back and that excitement is back. So you really hope Millwall don't have that lacking, really, tomorrow.
I was interested, Michael. I mean, there was a bit of a hoo-ha online about the flag, the MSC flag, not being allowed to be placed in the Charlton Stadium. And just going on from what we've just been talking about there with the lack of fans, the fact that there would have been a huge buzz after that, there would have been real momentum building, fans, the energy and so on. I found it quite interesting how much spirit seemed to be lifted by the sight of that one flag on the tower block at the back of the Charlton ground. There was some fans got a flag up there, didn't they? And the players seemed to appreciate the connection, and You know, I know Charlton were playing silly games with us on Friday night, but that sense of connection seems to be what players need in these last-ditch moments of the season. You know, small things make big differences, don't they?
No, of course, of course. And we've touched on a few times as fans, primarily, because that's what we are. And also, we've heard it in the media say that if there's one team who's going to struggle without their fans, it is Millwall, because of what the fans bring. So, no, I agree. And I think it was excellent, the connection that Alex Pearce obviously showed when he went over and he, you know, applauded and punched the air and things like that. And, you know, Millwall fans, people can have their opinion on them of who they are. I mean, even amongst our own fan base, we don't seem to like each other very much, which is all fine and well and good.
Well, I'm not too keen on you, to be honest with you, you know.
No, there you go, there you go. As for Ryan, yeah, we'll stay that off air. But we do have this connection as fans, one another. We all might look at each other and go, oh, what's he on about? But he's still sort of one of us. I think it's because there's a real feeling on and off the pitch that I think sort of everyone's against us. You know, we don't get the decisions. Let's be honest, Matt Smith.
No, look at Friday night.
He was getting beat up at some points nearly, and he still weren't getting a penalty. I remember a while back, did he either post a picture or he changed his...
He put a WWE sort of clip, didn't he?
Exactly. But you think 6 months before that, didn't he put an avatar up of one bloke half taking his shirt off and another one punching him in the face? And he said, no, still no penalty.
No penalty, a while back.
You know, so it happens. And I think that's what the understanding of fan base has got. And this also goes back to club identity, which we said, you know, during lockdown when we did some retrospective look backs. We are one of the very last old fashioned sort of working man, working class club, yeah. And the fans appreciate that, we appreciate that, and it just seems to gel well together. So it was nice to see.
It might be a small point, but Alex Pearce kind of coming back into the team came in at the really right time for that game. I think it was funny before the game, obviously we're fortunate from the stands, he came out applauding the empty stands for the warm-up, running right over, cheering them. Obviously the other players kind of having a laugh at him, and he did the exact same after the game. As the final whistle went to the away end where the fans would be. And is it ice cream time?
Yeah, can you, 99, or do they have any husky on
that? That is the loudest ice cream van that I've ever heard in my life.
But no, so at the end of the game as well, he's gone to the away stand and applauded them. You can see all the other players kind of having a laugh at him. But then he noticed the flag and all the players rushed over then. And it's just sort of thing that he, like him or loathe him, which I think he is a divisive figure on the pitch, but he has built a real connection with the Millwall fans, I think. There's so many pictures of him celebrating post-match wins and things like that. He could be a really important player in terms of that, building that connection with the fans kind of from afar. You know, I think his leadership carries through and people see that and do like that about Alex Pearce. So he could be an important player for us in this little run-in, I think, with his experience and with his passion. I think he could be important.
And just to repeat a point that you made when we spoke after the Charlton game, Ryan, I was fascinated to hear the on-field leadership of Ryan Woods, you know, which is not something that I think in a crowded stadium is always apparent, you know. But you said he was really barking out orders and giving directions and, you know, calling the shots, quarterback style, so to speak.
Yeah, it was surprising to see. And I think a positive again. That's why if he can play in that similar role against Borough, I think he will build on it and he'll build confidence. And I think him and Ben Thompson and him and Jed Wallace could be players who build a really nice relationship.
So six massive points at stake, chaps. Three against Middlesbrough Wednesday, 3 o'clock kickoff, which is an iFollow only show. So I hope you're tuned in, you've got your instructions and you've got your iPads set up and not attached to your TV like I tried to do. And then again on Saturday, we've got Hull City at home. So by the time we next record our next Millwall fan show, we'll be either 6 points to the good or nursing lesser total hangovers afterwards. I want to move us along, chaps, a little bit. There's an ongoing scandal, criminal possibly, depends on some of the investigations that take place with Wigan, which is one of the strangest stories I think I've ever ever come across in football, which is the possibility that Wigan Athletic have been deliberately purchased and then deliberately taken into administration. That's the allegation that's doing the rounds on the internet, and I think was repeated by Rick Parry, the Football League chairman, that there's a Far Eastern betting ring that has money riding on them being relegated. We mentioned this the other day, Michael, when I was speaking to you, and I actually got an email from our lawyer, James. So I thought, well, I might just take the chance to read it. He says, as his ears were burning, he thought we'd answer Michael's question regarding Wigan. The EFL regulations provide for an automatic 12-point deduction where an insolvency event administration occurs. However, this can be appealed on the grounds of force majeure, which is, I think that's what Wigan are doing at the moment. Force majeure, the regulations identify the following examples of force majeure, which is where a club suffers a material adverse effect upon loss of anticipated income, or where the insolvency event is caused by the default of another club, i.e. someone not paying a transfer fee. Given that Wigan appears to have gone into administration because the new owner has refused to put the club in funds, or who knows what else now, what's coming out bit by bit, rather than a loss of income stream due to COVID-19, it seems to me, to James, that the exception is unlikely to apply. So he doesn't fancy Wigan's chances on the grounds up to now. Obviously, I would imagine that would change if evidence, and it would need to be pretty strong evidence, because I don't think there is any at the moment, of anything more underhand is out there. He says, for what it's worth, he thinks the EFL should amend its regulation so that a club gets an automatic points deduction if a sale is completed before the directors and owners test is passed and proof of funds have been provided. And that will disincentivize takeovers from happening without meeting EFL requirements. However, James concludes saying you can't legislate for a dodgy owner going rogue after they've purchased a club. And he says he'll bore off now. That's not boring. I find that quite interesting, James. So thank you for sending that. So basically, if this Wigan story is as dark as it seems to be, you know, alleged online, then that's an event way outside Football League regulation. I don't think there's any provision for someone deliberately crashing their own car, almost, you know. It's going to be an interesting story. I don't know if you boys have followed it, but it's got a lot of elements in it.
There's got to be something there, surely. I mean, because... Thank you, James, for emailing in or messaging in. That's really helpful, honestly, because, you know, I was sitting there scratching my head a bit. But if in theory that's the case, the EFL can literally just then hold their hands up every time anything ever goes wrong and then goes nothing to do with us. Then in theory, all you could get is, let's just assume it's happening, like, or that this betting thing is going on. Hypothetically, then anyone can do it and get away with it under EFL laws. Maybe not under sort of legality when it comes to nation by nation. But what's to stop anyone then buying a football club, purposely bankrupting it, and then putting a massive wedge on them getting relegated 6 months before?
So I think the from what I've seen of it, a lot of people are distancing themselves when they've been talking about it from this whole betting scandal kind of conspiracy theory, which, you know, may well prove to be true or have something in it. And you know, I think people are maybe distancing themselves purely evidence. From a legal standpoint.
Well, evidence exactly. Would be very hard to come by to prove that. I mean, if there has been such a bet placed and it's in a jurisdiction in the Far East somewhere, Philippines, I think I read. There's not going to be an awful lot of evidence. You know, you'd need the you'd need the betting slip, which wouldn't
exactly.
Exist.
the problem for the EFL, the problem that they have is like Mike says, there's nothing really to stop someone coming in and doing this. But I mean, if someone comes into a club and proves they have money and proves that they have, you know, the backing to fund a club, and then. Like you said, Nick, it's like deliberately crashing a brand new sports car. It's
absolutely
you cannot legislate for complete incompetence, not even incompetence, but complete just it's just unpredictable behaviour. So I think the one thing that the EFL could do would be to introduce basically a deposit, or like a bond sort of thing. So if someone comes in and buys a club, they have to not just prove that they have money, but they have to give X amount of money to the league or to the club, and that money is there throughout their ownership as like a rainy day fund and as proof that they are committed. But obviously, as it's a members club, owners will be the ones who have to vote that through, and owners would be the ones who wouldn't really be keen on doing that. Same with stricter background checks. Owners would have to vote that through, and again, they wouldn't want to vote on doing that as well. So I think Wigan's best course of action that I've heard they're going to probably take is taking, basically hoping there's a criminal investigation here, because I know that Al Young, the owner, who is supposedly the director of Wigan, No one has met him, spoken to him, or knows what he looks like. And so there are suggestions that maybe he is a shell. So I think Wigan's best course of action will be to appeal the decision on the grounds that there is some sort of criminal activity. And hopefully that appeal lasts until the end of the season, at which point they can sell some players or find a new buyer and kind of save themselves before any points deduction has to come in place. I'm sure the EFL will treat this as a special case. I think the 12-point deduction will be, you know, if it has to be enforced, it has to be enforced. But I think they are treating this kind of with a wary look at the moment of They have to treat this one carefully, because this is completely, in a time of unprecedented circumstances, this is completely unprecedented and unusual. So it's a tricky one. And I think the positive thing for Wigan fans is that their club is safe, I think. It's not going to, I don't think it's in much danger of liquidation. I think they've got three or four potential buyers who are genuine and positive. They own their ground. They have a lot of good players who will be worth a lot of money. I know Anthony Robinson, the left back, I think AC Milan were interested in him. A few clubs interested in Kiefer Moore. They have a few young players who are interested. So they're not in dire position where they're going to have to lose a load of players for an absolute pittance and, you know, get into the liquidation stage. So I think they'll be okay. It's just a really bad situation.
I mean, I'm not privy enough to the information that's solely into the fit and proper person procedure when it comes to buying football clubs, etc. But like when you go to a bank and you have a business plan and say, this is where I intend to be here, this is where I tend to be here, this is where I tend to be here, surely there's got to be something that the EFL must make these people sign that ensures that when you buy a football club, you will never be in a possibility, or you shouldn't even be allowed to be in a situation within 1 month you are able, you have to find a new buyer, or you have to find some
finance.
Isn't it the Bundesliga, or there's a European league? Don't they have to sort of prove when they, because with the whole becoming a member of the league and the FA, you have to apply to be in the league, even though you'll be approved. It's all very much a members thing, and it's to do with applications. Please, sir, can I be in your league, etc. If I'm not mistaken, that's how you get voting power. I think with the Bundesliga, they actually take that literal. So if, for example, let's say it's the Bundesliga, Bayern Munich do the whole, we want to be a member of your league, the Bundesliga will go, well, let me see your paperwork to prove that within 3 years you won't go bust. That's why the Bundesliga doesn't have to charge that much in season ticket. It might not be there, it could be another league. But so do you see what I'm trying to say?
The Bundesliga, of course, the Bundesliga particularly has their ownership structure is a lot different anyway, because they have the 50+1 rule. So all their clubs are fan-owned, apart from Hoffenheim, the traditional corporate ones, so Wolfsburg and Bayer Leverkusen, obviously company owned, Leipzig as well. But they normally are special exceptions, where I think the person who put the money into Hoffenheim was a lifelong fan, and basically he met a number of you have to show that you are basically committed to the club and have been committed to the club to put money in. So most clubs in Germany, 80% of them or whatever, probably higher than that, don't have that structure that we have in England. The thing with the fit and proper persons test is the owners and directors test. It's not been called the fit and proper persons test for a long time, and that's what I think misleads people. So the test is pretty much just, do you have a criminal conviction? Are you on a sex offenders register? Do you have proof of funds? Have you been barred as a director of any other companies? And it's pretty much just a tick box exercise that the lawyers go through. And if you pass all of those things, then you are fine to be an owner and director. The thing the EFL is the same. They don't have a what is your statement of intent. Like you say, like going to a bank with a business plan, they don't have that aspect of it. They don't say, right, what is your plan for this club? And that was a big discussion when, obviously in the summer with Bury and Bolton, people were kind of calling for the EFL to maybe take things in-house a bit more, the running of clubs in terms of how people have to say how they are going to run their clubs. And again, the problem with that is that it's the people who currently own the clubs who have to vote for that. And if, especially in the Championship, which is massively unsustainable, if they don't have a necessarily clear thought out plan, that would mean them having to sell their football clubs. And it also means football clubs become a lot less attractive things to buy. So they're in a rock and a hard place, the EFL. It needs reform. It needs something done about it. But the way the organisation is set up at the moment, and I guess the money that's in the game, it disincentivises, to use Nick's new favourite word, and makes it hard to do so.
You're listening to Acton Millwall.
I suppose if it were your intention to deliberately, if it were your intention to deliberately crash your own car, you probably wouldn't be best advised to tell the Football League beforehand that that's what you're going to do. So anyone set on that kind of, if I mean, there's, I don't know what evidence, I get a sense there's zero evidence and may always be zero evidence, but you're probably, you know, set up against something so deliberate for whatever reason, then it's very hard to legislate for. It's going to be an interesting storyline that unfolds day by day, week by week. So we'll keep an eye on that.
It puts in perspective again, Nick, as well. I know we've touched on it a lot of late, but a lot across Millwall's own situation. I think it puts into perspective a lot when you see everything else happening and what could happen. Absolutely. The worst. I think with John Berylson as an owner, we have such a strong foundation. He's like, I know you said on the last band show when you're talking about like the local owners who used to own football clubs. So John Berylson has that feel to him, even though he's really got no right being interested in Millwall, or no reason to, being from Boston, America, with maybe just a passing interest in football when he came in. The commitment he's shown and the business savvy as well, which can frustrate at times in terms of the money we're putting out, but you look at other teams in the Championship and how big losses they're running at. Millwall, I think, are still running at a small loss, but nowhere near anyone else, and it's healthy and it's positive for the future. I know we're thinking about an expanded stadium, and it really does kind of cheer you up as a Millwall fan to know that we're in safe hands as it is.
There's a line in the Stanley Kubrick film Full Metal Jacket, and that is that it's better, being alive is better than being dead. And I think that's the way you've got to look at your football listeners, that sometimes it might be that, you know, we seem a little unambitious, but if ambition leads you to the dark side, well, you're better off with, middle for diddle table season. So, yeah, I'd make you right, Ryan. I think, you know, we've said it before, we'll say it again. We are very fortunate in that way. I'm going to close the show out. Now, we had an email from one of our listeners, Mike Bissica. Thank you for the email, Mike. Praising our podcast format for the show. And he liked the fact that we had various voicemails in from the chaps to give their voices, which I quite liked too, actually. I don't know if you boys enjoyed that as a format. It's nice to get everyone's views in post-match, and you can't do it for too long, but a little 60-second post-match comment after the game. Mike enjoyed it. Mike Bissica enjoyed it. I hope you listeners enjoyed it, and I think the boys enjoyed it too. So we're going to continue with that on for the future. I think it worked quite well, personally.
I personally left myself out of that week's one. I saw myself a bit like Robin Williams in Dead Poets Society when all of his students are up on the table and he walks away proudly. I heard the voice notes and I thought, I can't top that, so I'll just walk away.
Yeah, I think as well, it's unfair sometimes to expect the listeners to go 2 or 3 weeks without a Harry Warren special rant. So I think giving them the opportunity, especially with the games coming thick and fast, I think after a few months without him, I think it's good to have him back with a bang.
I had to edit Harry's one because half of it was was muffled. I don't know what he was doing. It must have been so much venting so much spleen into his phone, he's probably speaking to the wrong end of it. You couldn't hear half of it. Having like a muffled whale crying at the moon like a midnight wolf or something, you know. But no, we'll carry on with that. Do let us know your views. Do email us, listeners. Do call us, voicemail us. We want to hear from you. 0208 144 0232. I will not answer the phone to you. Don't have to speak to me. You can just leave a message on. It's like an answer phone. That's all it is. So do let us know what you think to the shows. It's great to hear from you. And if you have any comment on any of the chapters, I love to read Venom and Spite. If you want to put anything into about anyone, then we share it amongst us and laugh at each other. It's great to hear from you. We're going to close out there, boys. We're going to go for some score predictions because we've got two games to face this week. We've got Middlesbrough on Wednesday and then Hull City on Saturday. So we're looking for score predictions, Michael, for Middlesbrough tomorrow, Michael.
Oh, I will go for 2, Middlesbrough 0.
And for Hull City on Saturday?
1, Hull City 0.
So you're going for the 6-pointers. I like that kind of optimism. Yeah. Ryan Loftus, Middlesbrough, and then Hull City, please, sir.
I'm going to match Michael's enthusiasm and go one more. I think I'm going to go 2-0 Middlesbrough tomorrow, and I think 3-0.
3-0.
We're going to be back with a bang and gunning for 6th spot with intent.
We're going to batter them on Saturday for Ryan. I like that. I do like that. I fancy us to get 6 points. I know this is bold talk, and I don't think I've ever predicted us to lose. So
it wouldn't be much of a Millwall fan show if you did, to be honest, Nick.
Take this particular old Moore's Almanac, Mystic Meg, with a big pinch of salt. This is, I'm going to go for two wins. I think we'll narrow wins. Let's go for a 1-0 tomorrow, and let's go for another 1-0 on Saturday. I think we'll win it narrowly both times, but we will win it. So fingers crossed, rabbit's foot in hand. Check out my interview, listeners, with Phil Walker, hero and star of the 1975-76 promotion-winning season. It's a great interview. It's released this morning. It'll be the edition just behind this one. So have a listen to that. I think it's well worth listening to. I want to say a big thank you to both Ryan and Michael for taking time out of their day today. Thank you, boys.
Thank you,
I'm waiting for Ryan. Yeah, I was going to say, I'm waiting for Ryan to do the well done. Yeah, thanks, Nick. No problem, mate.
It's too much English politeness flying around here. Big thank you to both of the chaps. Thank you to you for listening, dear listeners. And that's it. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to After the Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Over the dirty Millwall. Till next time.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.